Good morning, everybody. How's everybody this morning? I'm making sure we're all awake. Welcome to our 9 a.m. session. This is going to be an online session as well, so just some housekeeping stuff before we get started. First, make sure that we get into the Q&A, if you would go to the microphone to make sure that your questions can be heard by the folks online. For those folks online, welcome. For the folks here in the room and online, please make sure all your devices that make noises are turned off or at least silented, especially those people online. We don't want to hear that stuff coming through into here. At the end of the session, please remember to fill out the evaluations. That's very important for the committee, the program committee, in moving forward. It's our conference, and your evaluations help to make it better each year, so make sure you do that. It's when you go online to educost.com, and you click on the session that you're in, there's an evaluate button, and you'll click on that and be able to do it. Second, if you're a tweeter, the tweet code for this session is #E11_SESS075. So if we've got tweeters out there, please feel free to do that as well. So let me introduce our speakers. We have Mark Askren, who's the CIO at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. And we have Kimberly Harper, who's the Director of Portfolio Management from the University of Nebraska as well, Central Administration. So without further ado, I want to turn over the program to our two speakers. Let's give them a warm welcome.
Well, thanks, Bill, and welcome, everyone. Kimberly and I are really glad to be here and have a chance to discuss these issues with you. Also like to welcome our online audience. Glad you're out there. And I know there'll be somebody monitoring your questions and comments, so we'll be sure to pick those up as we go forward. Basically, updating the value proposition. Services catalogs are not a new idea. We've all been thinking about them. Some folks have probably done a lot more with them than I've done over the years. But first, Kimberly at the Central Office for University of Nebraska System and her colleagues did a lot of work with this, and then the next year, at the UNL campus, we picked up and modeled after that and started doing that work. We saw the value in it. So we're going to talk today about that. And as far as a little introduction, we all know that we've probably had at least a decade of demand accelerating. That's probably been going on 20 years. But a decade of fewer resources or perhaps flat resources. I believe I saw a survey, the most recent one, that 70% of us either have flat budgets this past year or decreasing budgets. From that view, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that higher ed IT is in crisis. I think some would say even the larger higher ed community is in crisis. We're certainly facing some challenges. We've got some real opportunities to do pretty transformational things. I think IT can lead the way with that. I think this is an opportunity for us in some ways to get back on track, but there's certainly some risks too. So this is not a picture of me actually, but it could be. I sometimes assume that position. Basically, I really do see us as needing to make a conscious decision. So we've talked at EDUCAUSE the last couple years about IT as strategist or plumber. You know, there's certainly some interesting conversation, informative conversation. I think most of us live in both worlds and try to spend more time on the strategy part, but bottom line is trains have to run on time, plumbing has to work, of course. But I think right now what we're seeing is that some of the discussion about our CIOs at the table and all that kind of stuff, I think what that really means from my perspective is that are the CIOs viewed as being strategic partners in the future of the university? Are they more than just the IT person? And so I think right now it's going to become, in the next few years, a more conscious, transparent decision on some universities' parts at least, as to, okay, well, IT is mostly a core commodity service, going to drive that cost down. If we can get some strategic value, great, but that's sort of where it lives versus a more balanced approach where, yeah, we're absolutely here to transform. We are the way to increase automation. We can get back to that. You know, I don't think we really stumbled. On the other hand, maybe we haven't focused as much on the academic mission. Maybe this is our new opportunity. So in the short term, and we're all, of course, living feels like kind of day-to-day right now sometimes as we go through these current times. With the budget cuts or even flat cuts, while software costs certainly are going up, hardware, you know, continues to be a great area for us in terms of increasing capabilities and reduced costs, but the software and services and even our staff costs, although they're increasing slowly, they are certainly going up over time. So we've got to figure out how to deal with that while still maintaining our mission of education, instruction, research, outreach. Got to balance all those. But really what we're talking about is taking mindful action now to help us get ready for that shift, to transform ourselves. And so what we talk about in terms of moving to services, catalogs of services, costing those, is really defining ourselves that way. And what that means from my view is that if you look at how we represent ourselves to the campus typically, how we represent ourselves perhaps to others looking at our campus website or sort of how who we are, is we tend to be an org chart, we tend to be office space, permanent employees, we tend to have projects that are kind of our world, of course, and project updates if we're diligent about posting those online. That's sort of our outside outer representation. There's certainly merit, especially on the project side, as far as that kind of gets to that question about what are we doing with our budget and our time. But we think there's another way to go with this, and we realize that many of you are already down this path, and certainly look forward to hearing from you about your experiences. But in terms of moving to a services catalog orientation to help define and redefine that value proposition, basically what do we produce versus what does it cost? So at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, we have about a $42 million overall spend on IT. That's all colors of money, all over the place, the entire campus. Central IT is a little less than half that. Now, you know, the question is, well, is that enough, too little, too much? I don't know, but $42 million is a lot of money from my view, and I certainly am responsible for demonstrating why we have that flowing through IT and what are we getting in return for that. So from a services catalog perspective, and as we talk about what we've done and lessons learned and where we're going with it, our main high-level strategic goals are that we need to do a better job of helping everyone on campus, students, faculty, staff, our management, understand what we're working on and make sure that we understand what they need. You know, we are a service organization. Need to make sure that we have that alignment. We'll probably talk a little bit more about some specific goals, but University of Nebraska system and University of Nebraska-Lincoln are going through very intensive growth phase in terms of increasing enrollment, accelerating our research, and at Lincoln, for example, we just published our most ambitious goals in the history of the university over the next 6 years. And so we need to make sure that that IT organization, and more specifically our services, which is really how we now are moving to define ourselves, that those services are lined up. That efficiency, I think many of us are in that mindset now, kind of modeling after the corporate world, that if it's a core commodity service, as Jerry McCartney from Purdue said Tuesday morning, kind of reminded me and the audience, that I think he described it as the curse of the commodity core services, is that they are essential, but they're not strategic. And so, the good news with that, perhaps, is it's maybe not that important where they are delivered from, as long as they're delivered and they're cost-effective. A lot of our services, perhaps most of our services, are around those core commodities. We need to be collaborative. I don't see us getting more revenue as a percentage of the university in the rest of my career. Some universities have done a really good job of finding ways to generate revenue from their IT department. I haven't really found that as a way to deliver that myself yet. That's certainly an interesting idea. It's worthwhile to pursue. But I see the huge payoff, and part of that is from being part of EDUCAUSE. And more closer to home, being part of the Big Ten CIC, is that instead of having more resources as part of our budget, kind of our IT engine, is that we will benefit from the collaboration and more than the talking and sharing, which is important, but doing significant things together, driving those costs down, increasing our ability to scale up. Once again, how do we define that? We define that around what our services are. Do we have a service that we can collaborate? Do we have a service that we could co-source or outsource? Do we have a service we don't need anymore? Strategic planning, of course, like I said, we at UNL in particular, and Kimberly with the University of Nebraska system, we have some very specific goals, but we need to make sure that the decisions we make are very much on target, don't have a lot of margin for error. And then in terms of relevance, getting back to that earlier change or fade away, it's possible if I don't do my job right, perhaps if we don't do our jobs right in the future, that the IT mission at the university will lose relevance, or at least the central IT component that we think of as IT. Perhaps the IT services will always be needed, but they don't necessarily need it to be provided by me or my staff. So that's why we need to get better at it. And at this point, I'll turn it over to Kimberly.
Apologize, I'm short, so. I'm gonna talk just a little bit about the details of what we did with our services inventory project. And so basically we asked ourselves, how can we utilize this maybe new orientation, new way of thinking in terms of services, and to describe ourselves to others, that understanding component or goal. And so we need to know, you know, what are the services that we actually provide? We, as in the IT providers, need to be able to define that, talk about that, describe that, and know where we fit into that. And that is a lot simpler or easier said than done. And so we brought in a consultant to do this for us. We tried to start with somebody internal, somebody that had been there for decades, knew what we did, who provided each of the component parts of our services to create this inventory, and found that that was just very, very difficult. Actually, the challenge of having somebody in-house do that work for us is that they're a little just too close. This is how we've always done it. This is how we've always talked about it. I know it by this terminology, and so everybody should, but that's not a customer's perspective. And so it was really key for us to bring in an outside person to really help us gain that outside view of what it is that we do and how we provide it. And so we asked ourselves the questions. The scope of this endeavor was, what are our services and how do we describe those to other people? Who are our customers? We often don't ask ourselves that, I think, explicitly. And there is a little bit of a difference here, I think, from a central administration perspective versus an IT department on campus, where you have completely different customer sets oftentimes. My shop doesn't really work directly often with faculty and students, not nearly like an on-campus IT department does. And then the question is, what do these things cost us? We're not a chargeback organization. Mark's shop does do that. And so even though we don't charge back for most of what we do, it's still important to identify, I think, what something costs us. Especially in the situation where people don't have to pay for those services, because if you don't pay for them, you sort of lose the perception or the understanding of what it really takes to deliver those. And so basically these three things were the impetus or the scope of the project that we started. And as I said, we brought in a consultant to do this discovery work for us, engaged all of our staff in identifying how they play a role in the delivery of everything, you know, all of our services. And so the first big challenge of this endeavor was simply conducting the inventory, creating that inventory. It's huge. It's not an easy thing to do. There's confusion about, well, these are all the steps that I do, so these must be the many services I provide. It doesn't work that way. Our staff do 100 things, and that might be one step in the provision of a single service. And so there was a lot of cultural, kind of just, this is how we've always thought and talked and done it, challenges to get over. So the deliverables for us kind of look like this. And as Mark mentioned, CSN went through this process first, and then they followed up shortly after. And thank goodness, his directive was, you know, let's not try to be different. If we fit into kind of the model that was discovered for central administration, let's not deviate from that. But where it's meaningful to do that, let's do. And so you see that there's a lot of overlap. The top darker shades of color really represent where we provide the same kinds of services, perhaps to a different customer group. Most likely that's the case. But the same kinds of activities. The ones below are where we deviate just a bit. And I would say the biggest aha from this is that we are an awful lot alike. We should be able to talk and help, collaborate, you know, feed off of each other in a lot of different areas. And so if we're not doing that, why aren't we doing it? And where are some possible opportunities in the future? And then there are a few things that are different. Of course, at central administration, we don't support classroom and research labs. We don't have a computer shop, so you know the technology sales and repairs function is not something that we provide. Some of the areas, though, we do have, we just call it a little different. So for example, the consulting and project management, we do that at central administration, but primarily to an internal group for ourselves. That's how we manage our project delivery, and so it's actually tucked in with our IT governance and service management service offering. They pull it out because that's really more of an external focus to their customers. That's something that can be provided upon a request, and then there would be probably a chargeback situation for that service. So this just gives you a little bit of an idea of kind of the discovery that we had at the end of it. And I think it was very, very helpful for us to understand, again, what our opportunities for collaboration are in the future. Another perspective or a different aha moment for us is really identifying who of our staff are providing these individual services or these service offerings. I don't know about you all. I think Mark can agree with me that for us, you know, Team A does this service. Nobody else does that service. They're the sole provider of the service. And that's how we've always talked about it. But if you really dig down into what you're providing and how you're servicing your customers, there's no way a single team can be the only piece of the puzzle for the provision of a service. And this is what we found, that if you look at every single one of our services, and those are going across the top in that small box there, and I blew up just a section of it so you could see, and then our teams go down the side, you can see how many of our teams are involved in user access and security, for example. We do have a security team, but they're only one piece of that puzzle. And so this is one of our biggest challenges. I think it is a paradigm shift for our folks to think that they are just one piece of the provision of many of our services. So we learned a lot. We learned a lot of things from this endeavor, and I'll just share a few of them. One is that really a services orientation is a much more effective way of looking at what you do and defining value. It's really how your customers come to perceive you, and if you can't also take that perspective, then you're going to be miscommunicating. You're not going to talk about yourself the way that a customer needs you to talk about yourself. You're not going to be able to describe anything in a way that's going to get you any further along. And so one of the ways, you know, if you talk about kind of the old way or the traditional way of talking about what you do, very siloed, very org chart related, like I said, you know, this team does this, or we have this product, never mind what it does and who it services, but we support this product. Very ad hoc or reactionary versus being able to look at what the needs are and instead of being more strategic. And so the services orientation, looking at what a customer needs now and in the future, will help kind of bridge that gap and get you from the sufferings of how we traditionally do things to where we want to and need to be in the future. The decisions, service decisions, one of the things that we realize, it has really widespread implications. I mean, oftentimes we make decisions without seeing how it's all related to one another. And just a very simple experience or example for us was we retired one student's information system and moved to a PeopleSoft implementation of the SIS. And so that allowed us to go from a mainframe environment for that to other. And our thought was, wow, we can save some money. We don't need CICS. We don't need all these other things that go along with the mainframe. But no, when you get into it, we still had other things sitting on that mainframe, still using that software. If you were to make that kind of siloed decision because your biggest application is now off, you know, it disrupts the service delivery of other things. And so when you see how these things all weave in together, you realize that one simple decision really isn't one simple decision. It has a lot of implications. Also, doing this service inventory, managing the service inventory, is a long-term commitment. We took this on a couple years ago. Things have already changed. If I go back to this picture here, the reason the infrastructure hosting is even a lighter shade of blue is because that's been added since we did this 2 years ago. It's not necessarily a totally new service, but it's a different focus. It's more of a promotion of something that we did once in a while for people who needed it, and now it's something that we are setting ourselves up to do on a more purposeful manner. And so this is a living, breathing thing. And if you don't readdress it every once in a while, it's going to wither. It's going to become stale. It's not going to be useful. And it's not going to tell the story that you want it to tell. We had some challenges, as I think that you will probably all relate to. The team focus versus the service orientation obviously was one challenge I talked about. The issue of resource facing versus customer facing. Are you your own customer? And do you think about yourself as your own customer? And if you don't, what does that mean in terms of service delivery, service expectations? Where do you fit in prioritization? And so those are all very important things to talk about and not easy to get over challenges. We often get trapped in what we think we know. This is, again, why there was so much of an advantage of bringing an outside person to do the inventory. They asked the questions that needed to be asked, whereas somebody who had lived and breathed that for years couldn't see outside of what they were used to. Another thing is there were a lot of drawing lines in the sand, you know, especially around the costing. So we put costs to all of our services, and I had to oftentimes decide, okay, that's associated with that service and not this one, or we're going to count that here and not here. And sometimes to an outside person it seemed completely arbitrary, because there's 150 ways you could do this. Actually, there's probably three times that. But at some point in time, you're just going to have to make a decision, stick with it, try to be as consistent as possible, and that's sometimes not easy to do, especially when people want justification for why you're doing what you're doing. But I would say that the biggest challenges that we had is really staff buy-in, because this really requires them to think differently. In some cases, it requires them to collect additional information, put their time into things that isn't directly related to service delivery, which that's what they're focused on doing. And so that has been a challenge for us. And they've come along, it's been a growth process, but it probably does not surprise you at all that that would be one of our biggest challenges. I would say a couple of the biggest things that we've seen so far as coming out of this inventory is our ability to communicate with leadership. So we at Central Administration have always produced this document called the WOW document, and it's just to describe what we do, how we do it. Well, it used to be very much centered around product. Okay, here's our email service and a product. Here's our SAP product and what we do with it. Now it's more around services, and I think it paints, again, a different picture. It's really customer-focused. What do they care and know about? Many of our customers really, I don't know what SAP is. I really don't care. Just pay me, and rightly so. So this was a huge outcome, was to be able to put money to this, to say how much something costs, how many hours are being put to these endeavors. Of course, that requires some time tracking. But then also to communicate with our customers. You know, when they go to a website and they see the information access team, well, do they know that that team is responsible for data analytics and reporting? I don't know. I mean, you'd have to know what information access meant and how we were using it. And so now we're trying to structure ourselves, and this is a shot of Mark's page, around what they know, the terminology they know, the services they know, the services they want. They don't have to know who delivers it. They don't have to know the product name. They can go, and it just makes more sense to them. And I believe this is where I turn it back to you. I also wanted to say before Mark comes up, we've put two versions of this presentation out onto the website. And so there is one that has more of the bullet points. So we just didn't want to bore you with that while you're here. But if you want to, as reference, go back. There is a lot of our notes on the other slides.
Oh, thanks, Kimberly. And we've noticed that our peers out there, and that's sort of the first thing we do these days with good intent and good results, is to look at what others have done in these spaces to the extent we can. And I believe we saw Ohio State and who were the other two?
Stanford.
Were a couple that we saw that were really exemplary, and I'm sure there's many others we haven't seen yet. So we view this as most things we do, perhaps almost everything we do, as not being unique to our institution. You know, there are some strategic differentiators that we're all involved with, but most of what we spend our time and our resources on are common to the higher ed community, sometimes common to way beyond that. And so we welcome opportunities to discuss things with you and ideas you have, things that you may be further along with or ideas you've got beyond our time today. We certainly would appreciate your outreach, and we'll be reaching out as well with some questions. So we've got a few more slides, and then we'll switch over to your comments and discussion both online and here in the room. To piggyback on to what Kimberly was saying, so basically I focus right now, we all are focusing on, so how can we be more efficient and how can we collaborate better? And so from our view, the way we define ourselves, almost our currency, is that set of services. And a couple examples that we touched on earlier, but just to dive a little deeper into those, is that classic issue of, okay, well, whether there's a system-wide office and they've got a lot of talented staff doing a lot of important things, we have folks at our Omaha campus, Kearney, our Medical Center campus, in addition to Lincoln. Same thing, lots of talented staff doing mostly the same things that we're all doing. And we have some joint software licenses. We do some things together. We have a good collaboration, consolidation around our ERP solutions. But there's a lot more we can do. And so by looking at the services approach, that can help us frame the discussion. It gets pretty hard if you want to talk about the world as an entire department and then which pieces might be able to work together. But if you can look at it as, here's our 25 core services, here's our 100 overall services, which opportunities are there? And Kimberly's central organization has the costing really done and well-defined. We're still working on it at Lincoln. But it is that long-term commitment. This is not something that is going to fade away. If it fades away, then we really haven't spent our time well. And I think that as I mentioned earlier, we're looking at co-locating some services with some outside providers that we certainly know within higher ed, with community source, Qualy, or otherwise, that there are going to be opportunities for us that are far outside the traditional build versus buy environment, and many of you are already deeply into that and already benefiting from it. And so from our view, once again, when we come to the table for our internal discussions, when we work with our colleagues within the system for discussions, this is how we're defining ourselves, and that is really a huge benefit for us. One last example around that is that system-wide discussion. As we look at what's been going on at Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, just to name a few systems I'm familiar with, that there's been a lot of progress and work and perhaps tough decisions made at times about how we're going to be more effective and efficient with different organizations that are doing similar things. We certainly have those discussions ourselves. I think I've been at Nebraska a couple years now. Right before I came, there was a conversation that now we're going to continue to have, and it's almost a permanent conversation for all of us, is, okay, well, if they're doing, if they have a data center and you have a data center, you know, what's up with that? Does that make sense? If we have 25 data centers on campus, that's been the conversation we've been having for a long time, is what can we do? Where does it make sense to consolidate that? As we go forward, the conversation is going to be more about, well, how many do we need within the system? How many do we need for DR? Should we be out in a cloud service? When I hear cloud, I'm immediately thinking now about, well, which service are we talking about and how much does it cost? What are our service requirements? As we build that up, then it becomes a pretty simple decision in a way, whether to put something in the cloud. It kind of cuts through some of those unknowns and uncertainties. For CIOs and other IT leaders, and for those of you within organizations as you're working through your careers, we have to be effective, of course, at strategic planning. And I think when we can enlarge our impact in a positive way, where we're not only effectively strategic planning IT investments for campuses or systems, but actually reaching beyond that to be a partner, perhaps in some cases even leading projects or investments or strategies outside of IT proper, that's how we add value. That's where IT, I think, recaptures what we got into the business for, is to make a difference. And that ultimately helps us with informed decision making. I'm very excited this week to hear about EDUCAUSE's interest in data analytics and the work that you are doing individually and collectively. That's a huge push now for us, as we've had major investments in transactional systems. That makes a lot of sense. We've got students have to be able to register, pay bills, and all the things that go with HR and financial systems, student systems. But then what? We know that, you know, a typical friction area has been, well, you put an ERP in, what about the reporting? Can I get to the data now? When is that going to happen? That's been that's a kind of another set of work, very complementary work. I think those that have been successful have found a way to get as much of that in to the transactional implementation as possible. But I think we all are looking to do better with that. And we have a data tidal wave that's already approaching, if not already consuming us. And even though we've been talking about data warehouses and all sorts of related technologies and processes for decades now, that I think that's something where very precision strategic analytics is the new incarnation of that that really will make a difference for us. And once again, we get back to, well, what does that mean in our organization? Is that going to be yet another branch on the org chart, or is that going to be defined as something that is viewed as a service and that is viewed as we know and we have figured out what our investment is with that? Because that analytics capability, once again, old school way would be, of course, we'll hire some people, we'll get some tools, off we go. That's what I'm largely doing. But that's not the only option now, of course. And so for us to be able to make those decisions about how to blend that, it's probably going to be a hybrid for most of us, you know, maybe for the rest of our careers, is where do we source in and out? And from our view, that services catalog is makes that a lot easier to make those decisions. So in summary, basically, bottom line, trying to view the world as, what is a commodity, get the cost out, what is a strategic differentiator, and a lot of those strategic differentiators live in decentralized IT around our campuses, and so from a central perspective, trying to figure out how to support that how to get out of the way when that's the right answer, how to provide infrastructure and services, how to subsidize and remove barriers to technology implementation. That resources, the alignment, like I said, there's really nothing that jumps out as a new buzzword, even as a new strategy. But from our view, services catalogs went from being an interesting concept to something that we view as our ability to do this and to then leverage it and to stick with it is really how we're going to transform our IT and ultimately have a positive impact on our institution. Well, that wraps up our slides. Thank you, folks online and in the room, for your time. We now have some time for questions and ask. I know there's someone monitoring as far as any questions from the online community, and then also for you, we've got a microphone on a stand in about the middle of the room. Ask that you use that so that the online community can hear. Any questions?
Given that there are a lot of people involved and departments involved in each service, have you identified service owners? And if so, what is the role of the service owner?
That's a really good point. So as far as that decentralized IT community, as I understand the question, is who owns the service and then how do we, we've talked kind of from a central IT perspective of what we're doing, how does that fit as you get outside of that, kind of as you go from the 20 million central IT spend at UNL, for example, to the 42 million. What we did at UNL as part of an IT task force that the Chancellor sponsored last year is we did ask the 25 largest IT organizations on campus outside of our central organization, sometimes even getting an accurate count of how many IT organizations there are on campus can be challenging, depends how you define it. But we did ask their help in defining what services they provide and what resources they assign to that. Now that is not nearly as rigorous a process as what we've described today, but we think for those that are interested, that can have merit. Now most of the services from that we're involved with, we own, or our central colleagues own, but I think it raises a good point because there have been two or three services that have been provided to others on campus that have come from particularly skilled entrepreneurial decentralized IT units on campus. And so they've been kind of outside the scope of this, but I, in the spirit of your question, I think that identifying who owns those and what we can do to help with that is going to be a big benefit. This touches on a little bit of that enterprise architecture perspective that Kimberly mentioned earlier about the mainframe decommissioning. Is that a next complementary push for us is to do enterprise architecture work, similar to what I've seen at University of Illinois and University of California, Irvine, from my time in those organizations. Tremendous work that's been done there that's had great benefit. Once again, not a new concept, but actually sticking with it, taking the time, focusing so that it isn't all-consuming, but that it's very targeted. I think that will tie in nicely, and that will help us get to some of those decentralized issues.
I would just add that in a more specific way for us at Central Administration, we recognize the definite need to assign owners to the services. If we are going to actually, again, kind of invest in this and make this a living, breathing thing that adds, that has value over time, we recognize the need to actually assign this to somebody. Our hope is to eventually use this information as a building block for better development of SLAs across all of our services. That really is going to require performance metrics identification and reporting, and the only way to logically have that happen is going to have to be somebody is responsible for that across, you know, for each of the individual services. Right now, it's my responsibility to kind of, at a high level, keep this fresh and assign costs and do the reporting, and there's no way that I'm going to be able to do that if we are having to report, you know, according to performance metrics and meeting SLAs and doing all of that. So it's a very good question, and that is going to be huge because that I talked about one of the challenges being staff buy-in. I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of pushback for that because that's a big job that is going to have to be assigned across our organization.
Other questions, comments, successes you've had in this area? I know a lot of you are already deeply involved with this.
Hi, I kind of had a two-part question. First part, how did you assign cost to an actual service? And then the second part of that, once you had this cost, did you do chargeback on that, or is that just part of your overall budget for getting the money for those services?
Sure. costing has been fun, and so some of it's pretty simple, some of it's pretty easy. You know, you purchase a piece of software, you maintain a piece of software, and that goes towards the provision of, I don't know, email or something like that, and so it's pretty straightforward. We do and have been collecting time for what our staff spends time on for quite some time now, and so as we started identifying these services, we've tried to align their time entry so that it's a little bit, you know, one-to-one as far as it can be. Infrastructure is near impossible to do because, you know, certain things just support the whole gamut of all of your services, and so there's where a lot of lines in the sand had to be drawn. Some of it we developed allocation algorithms, you know, based on what our software, you know, our current platform, you know, estimating how much of that is directly associated with this service versus that service where possible. But, you know, you're in VMware virtualization world, it's a challenge in and of itself. And so there have been some judgment calls and guesstimates along the way. Overall, because we aren't a chargeback organization, I haven't sweated it too much because I can afford to do that. We're already just paying for it. And this is just really allowing us to say, hey, see how much value we bring. This is what it would cost you if you were going to have to pay for it. If we were going to the route of starting to charge back, which I don't think that's where we're going, I think we'd have to be a little bit more diligent and scientific about it where possible.
And that's one area we do contrast in. And so from the campus perspective, we do a lot of charge back. I'm trying to move us to more of a hybrid model, because I think if you get all off the top or all charge back, it gets really, that's a different set of challenges, but it can get kind of rough. It's good to probably be somewhere in the middle, and actually kind of to give you, to tie into your question, a real world impact from this is I've been holding off having a meeting with our Vice Chancellor for Business and Finance, using EDUCAUSE as a good excuse, right, as far as getting ready for that. But she's been a great partner, and I actually look forward to the conversation. The topic is, what are we going to do about simplifying our chargebacks, and actually, are there some things we can do to eliminate some of those user charges so that so there's not a barrier to technology implementation? We know that chargebacks, the value of them, of course, is they change behaviors, and that can be great, and that can be a real problem, depending. So we do have a pretty tight set of standards for the campus, not an IT policy, but for the entire campus at UNL around service centers, and not, you know, kind of designed to break even and recalibrating every year. So this will be very helpful for us. And as one example of that, trying to get out of just saying, well, our networking is a big chunk of our org chart and a big part of our costs. How do we break even with that and still be able to invest in the future? To saying, well, here's 12 services that are really the core that we charge back out of networking, and what are we going to do about those 12? Could we even consolidate some of those?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. How did you folks decide to define what a customer is versus your other stakeholders, and do you make any distinction between the term customer and consumer?
We didn't make that distinction between customer and consumer, although it may be a very helpful distinction because it's hard. You would think that it would be very easy to say who is your customer, and it hasn't been. We have direct customers, we have indirect customers, which is kind of how I would describe maybe a consumer at some level. And so I talked about the internal versus external facing customer. Are we our own customers? And it's a whole different challenge, I think, or a different kind of exercise for us at Central Administration to do that as it is for the campus IT department. So I don't know that I have a very easy answer for you. I think every institution probably comes at that a little bit differently. You know, one of our biggest customers in Central Administration is our president. Boy, that's that. You know, you know the 80-20 rule. You develop a process for 80% of your, you know, universe, and then not for the 20, or maybe it's 90-10 or whatever. But he's that 1% that we jump to. I mean, you know, every time something, an issue comes in, a request comes in, you know, you have to jump very high and quickly and respond. And so he's a very important customer, and he's one. Where we have, you know, one base student, or we do service students because we support the student information system, but and that's a huge base. But then, you know, it's a kind of an indirect customer, as opposed to Mark, who has a help desk where all the students are going there. It's a very, very direct, person-to-person sort of provision of service. So there are many different ways, I would say, that you go through that exercise of identifying customer and how you respond to them, and down the line. I don't know if you have anything to add to that. But
no, that's a good point. And I think another complexity to that, it's an interesting question, is that we're now doing more partnerships with our state government. Hopefully we can do more with local government beyond that. And those organizations within the Big Ten and elsewhere, as far as so how we're going to figure out how to calculate costs and define customers versus partners versus sponsors are going to be challenging. I think what I've seen success for with us so far is trying to be consistent. It's one of these things where if we try to get it perfect, we'll never get anything done. But if we can be good and useful to us as far as helping us be more effective, if we can draw some of those lines, occasionally being arbitrary, that can help us be consistent. So at least, you know, we'll change it, improve it over time, but we're not all over the place on that same question. And so I think, you know, it gets kind of easy to look at it and say, well, perhaps, you know, this doesn't make perfect sense. And I guess my response, if I could ask that from our staff or our partners on campus, would be, you're right, we're hoping it makes good sense, but it's certainly not perfect yet, and we're working on that.
Hi, I think I have two questions. One, I think you showed us a snapshot of the kind of reporting that you do. Mm-hmm. The question would be, have you all found any kind of dimensions that you focus on that have been especially helpful to you in either analyzing what you do or sort of portraying your story to others, you know, students versus instruction, or this college versus that college, production support versus R&D versus new development, those kinds of things? That's kind of question one. Question two is, I'm new at my institution, and I've been talking with my staff about these kinds of things, and they're very accepting, and we're moving on some things, but one of the reasonable questions they ask is, so what's going to be different because we've done this? Can you all, if you haven't already, and I might have missed it, but give us a couple of examples of specific decisions that were made or actions that you've taken because you have done this? Thank you.
Sure, I'll answer the latter part and ask Kimberly's help with the first part. So you're right, I think that is the real question, is what makes it different? And one example for us is looking to define even our, we moved from locally hosted email, now we're migrating to email in the cloud for faculty and staff, and helping just even figure out what that service is kind of easy to conceptualize, but all the costs behind it, was very helpful when we looked at what it would cost to not only run a cloud-based email solution for faculty and staff, but what the migration costs would be. So that's an area that doesn't really pop out in terms of maybe people seeing it, but it made a difference for us when we were trying to figure out what was the bottom line for us in order to be able to make this deal. Another one has been basically redoing our disaster recovery. Once again, probably the least exciting thing that we could possibly spend our time on is preparing. But it gets pretty helpful if we ever have that unfortunate big event. I know some of you have had that. And so a bottom line for us, when we completely redesigned our disaster recovery, and we're about 6 months into a process, and have switched over using Quali Ready, so we're trying to really rethink this, is that our entire disaster recovery process is around services. It's not so much around, even it's not around the data center per se, as much as, okay, which services would be lost with the data center being lost to fire, for example. Kind of a simple concept, but a different way of looking at things. And so that made a difference for us. But those stories don't necessarily translate well outside. And I know we're out of time, so we'll just ask Kimberly's help to either add to the second part or to answer the first one. And
just to add to the second part real quick, I know that my boss, the CIO for the system, has utilized the information to make justification arguments for new staff in certain areas. You know, one of the things that we've learned over the years is that our vice president of business and finance, our president, they aren't geared to, or created to intuitively understand IT, how IT, what it costs, how it works. And so to take it to a service level and put it to, well, this is how it would affect you and the services that you, use, has been really helpful. You know, just understanding where we invest in hardware and software, those are our biggest investments. And they don't understand that, you know, although our budget might be $12 million, that, you know, half of that or more is staff, and then the vast majority of the other is hardware and software. We don't have a lot of playroom. And so we were able to kind of tell that story a little bit easier. With regard to the first one, if I were sitting on a campus, I would say definitely this kind of reporting by college or school or whatever would be very interesting, because they're probably investing at different levels in their IT spend. But the way that we have traditionally done our reporting is the type of expenditure. Is it hardware? Is it software? Is it staff? Is it, you know, are just ongoing operational costs that they constantly focus on is where we should cut, travel, professional development. You know, we are able to show that we've already cut that to death. We're going to pretty much be grounded and never advance in anything if you cut any more there, and that's not where you're going to have the savings that you are looking to have. You're not going to cut, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars out of our travel budget. So we do it that way. We also identify what we would consider keeping the lights on versus project work and administrative type activities, because we all go to a lot of meetings and it's not really a project related. You spend a lot of time doing things like that or vacation or whatever. And so that's kind of the level at which we have done a lot of our reporting, and it's been very helpful. So thank you very much.
Thank you all very much for your questions.